people are go-with-the-flow kind of people. Sometimes that's a good thing. But some people are go-with-the-flow kind of people in a bad kind of way, in that they kind of take whatever life has and whatever life dishes out and just kind of say, yeah, whatever. You know, you want to go see a movie? Yeah, sure. You want to go get dental work done? Yeah, whatever. You know, good, bad, indifferent, doesn't make a difference to them. They just sort of take what life brings them, and they don't really take any ownership over it. You know what I'm talking about? People just sort of seem to be almost at the whim of the world. You know, things come, things go. You can say yes, you can say no. You might have a choice about what happens, you might not. But, yeah, whatever. There's good, bad, indifferent. A passive yes. You want to do that? Yeah. Okay. If that's what's going to happen. All right. That's not our Mary. That's not how I see Mary. Mary's got a little bit of a different approach to life, I think. An angel appears to her. Let's imagine that this is, you know, this is what's happening, and this story is literally taking place, and there's a young girl, 13 maybe, very young, engaged to probably a slightly older man, much older man perhaps, but engaged to an older man. It's typical for the time and place. And they have not yet been married, and so they've not yet had sex. Okay, good, right? Young girl, very young girl. And she's sitting by herself doing whatever, you know, probably washing laundry or gathering grain or whatever it is that she does during her regular day. And an angel appears to her and says a whole bunch of stuff. Greetings, favored one. What? The Lord is with you. What in the world do you mean by that? I'm a 13-year-old girl. I'm doing my chores. The Lord is not with me. I'm just hanging out here. What in the world could you possibly mean by that? The Lord is with you, and you have received God's favor, and you will conceive and bear a son. Well, obviously, you don't know how this works, Mr. Angel, because I may not be a doctor or a scientist, but there's some stuff that needs to happen before I can conceive and bear a son. It ain't happened yet, so cool your jets, because I think you're a little bit ahead of your time here. No. The Spirit of the Lord will come upon you, and you will conceive a child, and we will name him Jesus, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. And your cousin Elizabeth, who is said to be barren, she's going to have a child too. In fact, she's already in the 6th month of her pregnancy. She's never been able to even so much as conceive before. And she's going to bear a son as well. And if she can give evidence to the power of God to bring life in places where life just doesn't seem to want to exist, if she can do that and be that vessel for that, if God can bring life in her, cannot God also bring life in you? Nothing is impossible. And Mary could have said, you know what, that's still a little crazy. That's still quite weird. And I don't know that I'm really up for that. I don't know what would have transpired had she said no. I don't know how much of a choice she really has. Is the angel saying this is an invitation, or is the angel saying, oh, this is what's going to happen? But she could have said, I don't really want any part of that. She could have said, you know what, if it has to be, whatever, then it has to be, because that's what's going to happen, and there's nothing I can do about it, but I'm not going to like it. I don't have to like it. We may not always have a choice about what happens to us, but we have a choice about how we feel about it and how we react to it and the spirit with which we enter into it. And she could certainly have said, well, okay, whatever, if that's what you say, but I don't have to like it. I don't have to be excited about it. And instead she says, here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be for me according to your will. And then she bursts into sort of song, into poetry that we heard earlier. My soul magnifies the Lord. She gives thanks. She gives praise to God for what is about to happen in her life. She says yes to God in an active way, not passively, you know, I'm going to move in, sure. Actively. Do you want to bear the Messiah into the world? Yes, I do. Okay, then. Now imagine what she's giving up. This 13-year-old girl, she's giving up her childhood, which is probably on its way out anyway. Children did grow up faster then, got married younger then, obviously. They lived in a much harsher, more brutal time and had to work a lot and had to bear children early if they could so that those children would have time to be raised and be healthy with a much shorter life expectancy than we have today and all kinds of things. So maybe there's not much of her childhood left, but whatever's left of it, she's giving it up. And she's certainly giving up her reputation. This unmarried woman who's now going to be walking around, you know, a few months' time, she's going to be pretty visibly pregnant to the world around her, and we never really get, aside from the fact that Joseph thinks very momentarily about putting her aside quietly and not marrying her, calling off the engagement and not marrying her, aside from that, we never really get any sense of what the reaction would be. But for a woman to become pregnant out of wedlock is a capital offense, perhaps. Or it could, at the very least, bring incredible dishonor to her and her family. I mean, who would ever want to marry such a woman? She was engaged to another man, but before she married him, she became pregnant. You know, we don't want to associate with such a person. We have all kinds of nasty names for ladies like that, and we have all kinds of ways in which to treat folks who can't be faithful to what they're given, who can't be faithful to what was before them. We're going to just cast this woman aside. So she's giving up whatever hope she might have had that she would be a respected member of her society. At least at the time, that's what appears to be. She's giving up certainly whatever dream she may have had about, you know, having some married life with her husband to get to know one another and their relationship together and their marriage together and have some time to really establish and settle into life together. And even their married life together and celebrate the conception and birth of their first child together. She's giving up whatever dream she had about that. Whatever dream she may have had about other stuff she was going to do in her life. Who knows what her aspirations were? She's given all that up. And what is she taking on? Well, every parent knows what she's taking on. Every aunt, uncle, grandparent, older sibling knows exactly what it means to prepare for a child. Got to baby-proof the house, for starters. Got to clean up all the sharp objects that are on the ground. You got to make a space somewhere, get the nursery ready, fresh coat of stucco or something. You know, find a place for the baby to sleep, which we know is going to be a problem later on. Got to make some physical space. Got to make some emotional space. Prepare herself. You know, this morning she was a single woman looking forward someday to a marriage, and now all of a sudden she's going to be a mother and a wife in a matter of months, and she needs to prepare for that. So I think there's a reason it takes 9 months, because that's a lot for a parent to do, and she's going to do that pretty fast. Get used to that idea pretty fast. Get herself ready. Get her whole life ready. Your life changes radically when there's a kid in the equation. So there's a whole bunch to be done, just in terms of, you know, got to feed another person, got to clothe another person, got to make sure we've got the money, we've got the means, we've got the resources to take care of this child. And who knows if my family's going to help out, because they're going to think that I just, you know, have done something nasty or wrong or hurtful to them and to my fiancé by conceiving a child out of wedlock. They're going to be really upset with me. So we've got to figure out, you know, how this is going to work. Where's the room? Where's the space for this child in my life? Right now. She certainly could have said, you know, I'm not down with that. I am not ready for this responsibility. Can you go find somebody else? Maybe somebody with a little bit more experience in child rearing. Maybe somebody with a little bit more experience in worship of God. This child is who you say he's going to be. Don't you want somebody who's a little bit more well-known in the community, maybe established in a religious community? How about, you know, like the wife or fiance of one of the folks who works in the temple or who has been, you know, following some sort of worship life. And my husband is a carpenter. I mean, he's from the house of David, but he's a carpenter. He's a nobody, really. I'm a nobody, really. I'm not really up for that. She doesn't say any of that. She doesn't do any of that. She doesn't even say, well, yeah, if that's what has to be, that's what has to be. She says, yeah, I'm there. Let's do this thing. My soul gives glory to the Lord. My heart magnifies God. That's what she says. No passive yes from our Mary, but an active yes, a decision to not only do what is asked of her, but to embrace it, to celebrate it, to go all in with it. We've talked throughout Advent about what it means to prepare ourselves. We've talked about clearing away other stuff, clearing away the clutter and the expectations of the holidays and all the other stuff that our culture likes to tell us that Christmas is about, shopping and buying things and giving and receiving presents that are really extravagant, and clearing away all of those expectations and those ideas, and clearing a spot in our world in terms of seeking justice for people, because that's what Jesus was about, proclaiming equality and justice and uplifting the poor, the impoverished, the hurting. We've talked about clearing a space in our hearts by getting rid of the pain and the sorrow and the anger that we carry around in. But just like when we're preparing space, clearing space for a child to be born into a home or into a family, and there's preparation to be done for that, there's cleaning up to be done for that, there's some really significant clearing, preparing, getting ready, if we take seriously the birth of Jesus in our lives, again and again and again every year. What do we need to prepare so that we can clear a space for Jesus in our hearts? The way that Mary prepares a space for Jesus in her heart. She says, yes. She says, let it be with me according to what you've said. Let's do this. She says, I'm willing to put aside my concern about my reputation, my family, my ambition that I might have had, or my hope that I might have had for the early days of my marriage. I'm going to put that aside. I'm going to commit myself to this vision that you've given me of a child that will be the Holy One of God. And she prepares a place for Christ in her life, in her lifestyle, in the way in which she's going to go about her everyday routine. She's not going to cook a meal for one person. She's not going to cook a meal for two people. She's going to have to cook a meal for three people. She's going to have to take time to feed and clothe and change a baby. She's going to have to take time to learn to wrangle a toddler. Now, he may have been the Son of God, but I am the parent of a toddler, and I'm going to tell you that that takes time and energy and a whole lot of patience. Even for Jesus. I think especially for Jesus. I bet he was a rascal of a kid. She's going to have to change the way she orders her life, the way she structures her life. We have to do that too. We have to change the way our everyday lives go. We have to change the way that we interact in the world. If we take seriously that Christ lives among us and that Christ is born among us again and again, and that this is the time of year that we celebrate that. If we take seriously that Jesus is born in our lives, then stuff has to change. We don't have to feed him and clothe him and chase him around the room and keep him from sticking knives in his mouth or whatever it is that toddlers do. That's what mine does. But you know, we don't have to do that necessarily. We have to change the way that we look at the world around us. We have to be willing, like a parent has to spend time with a child. We have to be willing to be ready to spend time with the Christ child, spend time with Jesus. We have to attune to our relationship with him, the way a parent attunes to a relationship with a child and makes that a priority, makes not just spending time, but listening to them and anticipating their hopes and dreams and visions and desires and life in the world. We have to anticipate what Christ is asking of us and listen to what Christ might be saying to us. We have to create in our lives and in our every day-to-day lifestyle room, intention, space for Jesus and for our interaction with Jesus, for our interaction with Christ, with God in Christ. We have to prepare ourselves. So it's Christmas this week. I don't know if you've noticed. It's Christmas this week. And how are we going to create a space? How are we going to be very intentional about creating a space in our hearts and setting aside all the other stuff and all the other junk and just saying an active yes? Yes, I'm going to celebrate Christmas this year as if it was the birth of Jesus. and not the celebration of consumerism. I'm going to celebrate Christmas this year as if it was about the love of God as seen in our love of one another, and prioritize family and friends and loved ones. Yes, I'm going to celebrate Christmas this year as if it was the coming of Christ in my life. And if that means that I need to spend a little more time with God, if that means that I need to spend a little bit more time and energy thinking about, praying about what it is that Christ is asking of me, and that's what I'm going to do. Yes, I'm going to celebrate Christmas this year as God breaking into the world, God being made known in the world, and everything that that means to me. I'm going to make room for that. One of the traditions that we had in my house growing up was that on Christmas Eve, we would read the Christmas story before bed. That was our family tradition. We didn't open presents Christmas Eve or have cookies, really, Christmas Eve. But what we did was we would sit around the Nativity, and my mom had made Nativity characters. This wooden crèche, but then the people were all these little kind of almost rag dolls, the beans at the bottom, cotton stuffing. They're really fun to play with as a kid. And we would tell the story. We'd read the story from Luke, and kind of my sister and I would act it out, you know, balance the Mary on the donkey and kind of have them walk around. Of course, baby Jesus was hiding, and by Christmas morning, that was apparently one of the things Santa did, was Santa put out baby Jesus, because Jesus was nowhere to be found. So, we would tell the story, and we would bring the nativity characters to the manger scene and kind of set them up and keep the wise men off the side because they weren't there yet, put the angel on top with the star at the ready, and leave the manger empty. And that was our way, and something that's always stuck with me, that was our way of celebrating Christmas Eve and reminding ourselves. Our parents were really intentional about that, reminding us as kids every year that this is what this is about. We make space right now, forget the presents, forget the wrapping paper, forget the leaving cookies out for Santa Claus, and we also left lettuce and water and carrots for reindeer and all sorts of things. And forget all of that for a minute, because this is what this is about. And the last thing we did before we went to bed was always reading the story of the birth of Jesus, reading the story of Mary and Joseph traveling to Bethlehem, reading the story of the shepherds, hearing the good news. We read the whole story, even though we didn't put Jesus out yet. We read the whole story to remind ourselves to take some time, to make some space for what this is really about. It's not about just going along with what happens around us. It's not just about, you know, turning on the radio to some Christmas music that's, you know, some of which might be O Holy Night and some of which might be Frosty the Snowman. Who knows? It's not about just sort of saying, yeah, you know, it's a great holiday, get some time off from work, get some time off from school. And if that's what we want to do, yeah, sure, whatever. It's about saying yes to God. It's about making space in our hearts, in our lives, in our homes, in our celebration of Christmas for Christ. We don't have to be insane about it. We don't have to yell at people who wish us happy holidays and say, Merry Christmas to you! We don't have to go nuts about that aspect of it. But in our lives, in our relationship with God, and in how we celebrate with our families and our loved ones, we need to take time and space and energy to say yes. Yes, this is about what God has in store for us and not what we thought we needed or we thought we had in store for ourselves. Yes, this is about God coming into our lives and changing our lives, not our routines and our situations and what we think needs to happen. But yes, this is about listening to God, attending to our relationship, our interaction with God. This is about saying yes to God, not yeah, whatever to God. Yes, God, I will do what it is you're calling me to do, and I will do so with rejoicing. My soul gives glory to the Lord. My heart magnifies our God. And here we are. Here we are this week of Christmas, servants of God. Let it be for us according to what God has in mind.